Okay, we'll get going here. All right, I want to welcome everyone to the November 8th special session of the Port of Kingston Commission. Comments from those in attendance will be allowed upon recognition of the chair. Please identify yourself by stating your name. If you would like to be added to the agenda for a future meeting, please contact the port office at least 1 week prior to the regularly scheduled meeting. Please submit your documents and presentations at the time of your request. This, we have a preliminary agenda, which is subject to change. I'd like to call the meeting to order at 8:50, and if we could please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance with the flag behind us, I believe.
Okay. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Awesome. Okay, so we have a preliminary agenda, which I'll just state it here, that we have basically a we essentially will have a public comment period prior to the actual public hearing, and then we'll recess to the public hearing, conduct the public hearing. The public hearing is regarding hearing on approval and adoption of the 2023 budget, and this includes the staff recommended proposed marina rates for 2023. After that, we'll adjourn back to the regular session. Within the public hearing, we'll take public comment as well from those. And I hope, can you guys hear me in computer land there? Okay, yeah, all right, good. Yeah, so at this time we have our initial public comment portion, and then we'll go to the recess to the public hearing. We have a preliminary agenda of any other matters that that my co-commissioners would like to address, or is this?
I move that we accept the preliminary agenda.
Excellent.
I'll second that.
Very good, and all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Excellent. Okay, so now we have a momentary public comment period. Any comments at this time from anyone? No? Okay. Ron? Mike?
No.
Good? Okay. All right. Very good.
I just want to listen, see what's going on.
Very good. Excellent. Did you have something, Ron?
No.
All right.
I haven't figured out either.
Okay. We are, we had a slight technical issue this morning, as you maybe are aware, but I think we've got this sorted. Right now, I'd like to recess to the public hearing. Again, the Port of Kingston is holding this public hearing on the approval and adoption of the 2023 budget. This includes the staff presentation of the proposed marina rates for 2023. Okay.
With action, ultimately.
Action would be...
Not today.
This is just the hearing.
But I was just making sure.
Yep.
Next week.
Okay.
I think it has to be a certain amount of days before. Public hearing has to take place a certain amount of days before. We should verify that before we, do it on.
Okay.
Yep. Remember that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we went through each of the RCWs. That schedule should be in totally compliance, and then
okay.
We published it in post notification.
Yeah,
so,
right,
so
in the paper, right.
So we'll go over this budget another time. This will probably sound a little bit like a broken record. I just got another copy of those in case I didn't have them.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Didn't want you to be searching for a document.
And you have everything you need, Mary?
Okay.
All right.
So it'll probably sound very familiar from last time. So this budget for 2023 uses 2022 as the baseline for next year, and the various revenues and expense line items have been adjusted to reflect trends that we are experiencing or believe we will be experiencing. The port is projecting operating revenues of $3.368 million, which is about a 4% increase. Operating expenses of about $2.87 million, also a 4.4% increase over 2022. Net income under this draft version would come in at $28,727, which includes depreciation and amortization of nearly $469,000. Total projected cash inflow would be just under $474,000. Now, the $474,000, it's not, that's basically what we would contribute to our savings, but you also have to back out capital expenditures, mm-hmm. which we're proposing that we would be spending virtually all that money in total on capital projects for next year. Mm-hmm. And I'll get to the capital projects, but that some of those are rolled over from this year into next year, just because we're not going to spend the money this year.
Right.
I wanted
right.
it to be shown that we were going to be doing that ultimately.
And this is the capital book we have here is the capital plan.
Yeah.
So the three-year capital plan. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
So I'll run over some of these items, and then we'll end with the capital program. Circle back. If you have any questions, obviously just interrupt me if I'm looking down or something. Generally, revenue is broken down into direct and non-direct revenue. Direct includes operating revenue, and non-direct revenue includes property tax receipts, grants, interest income, and leasehold excise tax. Permanent mortgage revenues should increase with the rate increases since occupancy has stayed at 100% for many years. So we've had 100% occupancy in the marina for years and years. So if we increase the permanent mortgage, obviously that's going to result in increasing income.
Right.
The rates reflect an effort to stay close to the overall average rate for each slip size. We collect rates for over 50 marinas to determine average market rates. Current rates are based on the previous year's average rate for each slip size. So we're always lagging 1 year behind. Our goal, which was established 3 years ago, and which we're gonna propose to continue on with, is to reach the average rate for all marinas surveyed over 3 years of steady rate adjustments. Since we base the next year's rates on previous year's mortgage rates, we are always going to be trailing the actual average for mortgage rates. So we're still actually always going to be below the average, unless for some reason the market drops below average, which no one's doing. Everyone increases their rates or stays the same at the very worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. We have a wait list that continues to remain strong. 10 out of the 252 permanent mortgage slips, or about a 4% turnover, were pulled from the wait list this year. So 10 out of the 252 slips actually changed to a different person that came off of a different boat owner that came off of the waitlist this year in 2022. The waitlist continues to backfill with new additions to the waitlist. Information from BST Associates, Paul Sorensen, who did a presentation to the commission a couple regular sessions ago, and Wagoners, Mark Munzel, indicates that there is more demand than supply throughout the Puget Sound, and virtually all marinas have wait lists. Guest mortgage has grown and it should remain strong. We are continuing to build guest mortgage demand from yacht clubs and hope to expand to Canadian yacht clubs. The COVID basically brought that to a halt, but we hadn't really pursued or done much work with any Canadian yacht clubs. We put together a database of the yacht clubs, and we're going to pursue them. Direct sales and additional approaches to market the port will be pursued through the coming year. We are concerned about the effect the price increases and volatility on fuel, and and in turn, the effect that the volatility and the price increase on fuel affects the boaters. So what we've seen is, as I think there's a certain threshold when you start getting $5-6 a gallon, boaters, especially power boaters, right, they start to, they all of a sudden the demand doesn't seem to be as strong, and does affect the demand. Seasonal moorage has grown steadily, and we see this trend continuing through the next 2 to 3 years before it will likely plateau. Seasonal moorage occupancy is also dependent on selling direct to boaters, and so we need to increase our efforts in this area. Utilities are going to be closely monitored so we can recover these costs. We can't make money on utilities, but we can recover the utility costs. In some instances, we pass on the utility cost directly to our tenants or our customers, mm-hmm. and in other cases, we just roll it into their overall charges. But we still need to take that into account, because it reduces the actual bottom line, mm-hmm. if you're lumping in other costs into, let's say, permanent mortgage or guest mortgage. Real estate lease revenue should stay relatively flat, except for CPI adjustments where applicable. Property taxes increase 1% and are capped due to legislation. And our property taxes are really minimal compared to some ports. If there are 12 ports in Kitsap County, Bremerton being by far the largest, has the largest port district, therefore they have largest taxing capacity just because the property values are the greatest by far. The rest of the ports are small port districts. Unlike if you go to Jefferson County in Port Townsend, or you go to Clallam County in Port Angeles, or you go to Camas Washougal, where they get much more substantial property taxes. So Camas Washougal, which has actually a very comparable port to us, similar marina size, they have one terminal. They do maybe $2.5 million a year in property taxes compared to our $227,000. So it's tenfold, so they get $25 million every 10 years, and mm-hmm. we get, $2.2 million. Yeah. So you see that, but that translates into being able to have money to spend. They've got $75 million every 30 years yeah. for replacement of all assets. Mm-hmm. They could probably replace the whole port for $75 million, no problem. So whereas we have to really work off of rates and fees, grants, multiple sources of funding. So that's important. Mm-hmm. Parking is challenging to predict, but we expect parking revenue to continue to strengthen. It has nearly reached pre-pandemic levels. Also, Kitsap Transit is kicking off a marketing campaign to increase ridership. We treat fuel as its own line of business. Prices and costs have been prone to volatility, with prices hitting record highs. We had a long period of almost like record lows for fuel, and now it's flipped on the other side of the coin. This volatility has had a distinct dampening effect on demand in boating, especially after a long period of record low prices. Fuel prices have increased significantly, so the revenues have been increased, but so have the costs of goods sold for mm-hmm. fuel. This line of business could move the gross revenue numbers up or down, but will have little effect on improving profitability. Other than if overall demand goes down, obviously we make less money. The profit margin stays, we try to keep it pretty static. Mm-hmm. When you have real volatility, though, there are times when we might have to take we even took a loss
on a couple
tank loads because we bought them at the very peak of the market. The market dropped $1.50 a gallon. No one's going to buy fuel from you at $1.50 a gallon more than across the way. Yeah. So if prices remain too high, it will definitely decrease guest mortgage revenue and profit. So turning to expenses, salaries and wages. Budget reflects a 5% adjustment across the board for all employees. Other ports and agencies are adjusting by CPI, which is 10.1% for June, which is what people use when they're doing their budgets. We all have a similar budget cycle for all the ports. So they will use for their budgeting purposes the CPI numbers for June, which again, that was 10.1%. Given the aggressive interest rate hikes by the Federal Reserve, we believe we are already in a recession or headed towards a recession. Recessions are formally defined only in retrospect, but it seems to have an effect on consumer demand for discretionary spending, which voting falls under. If cost of living does not come down, we will look at adjustments in the coming year. But for now, permanent increases using current CPI does not seem justified at this time. Having said that, we base compensation on market data and performance, the goal of retaining staff and investing in them. Staffing turnover is extremely expensive, time-consuming, and incredibly challenging to backfill with new qualified employees in the current environment. And competition for qualified staff has become even more difficult in the public sector, as well as having to compete with the private sector companies. Employee medical is increasing an estimated 5 to 10%, and we budgeted 7.5% for the increases for medical. Pension expense. The pension contribution requirements issued by the state of Washington have started to vary from year to year. Individual employee contributions are at 6.36%, and employer contributions increased from 10.25% to 10.39% currently. Training and education. Training and educational opportunities will include updating our staff on the marina management software, and we will be researching other alternatives for accounting software. Other than the Microsoft package and Adobe, our primary software that we use is Scribble for the marina management software, and we use QuickBooks for the accounting software. Scribble does not have many subscribers. It seems kind of marginally supported. It's really expensive to get training through them, but it's what we have currently. And most marina softwares are somewhat similar, so if we train them up really thoroughly on Scribble, we're thinking even if we do have to migrate to another marina software, if we move to a different accounting software, mm-hmm. the accounting software and the marina software have to mesh.
Yeah.
They have to mesh. So, but we won't be making a change probably until 2024, but we'll research during the coming year. In IT, we have covered what we think are our needs for hardware, software and workstations, and laptops for the coming year. We have two servers, plus we back up things onto the Amazon Web Services, plus we have a hard drive. So we have redundancy in four different ways in the event of any kind of ransomware, and we shouldn't lose time mm-hmm. in terms of getting back online, mm-hmm. which quite a number of agencies and businesses have been experiencing most recently.
Yep.
So we're updated on everything there, so we should be good to go, yeah. And it's all online. So last time I think I reported to you guys, we had purchased the network, a separate network, mm-hmm. but we hadn't got it online. Now it's online.
Right,
So with regard to utility, so we put a lot of effort to track our utility costs, and we're not done yet. We are putting in place measures to ensure we maximize cost recovery. Utilities are expected to increase slightly, and we have budgeted a 5% increase. And we just recently did receive a notification from, I think it was Puget Sound Energy, on price increases, but I can't recall right off the top of my head exactly. I think it was actually a little bit below 5. Excise taxes, no changes are expected. Credit card charges. So I've talked with Audra, and our controller, and we feel like, you know, we've been paying excessive fees, and she's identified this as a real area of concern. We believe we can likely reduce credit card charges annually. However, we need to integrate any changes with our business processes, our customers, our bankers, and coordinate with Kitsap County, since they are our treasurer. Mm-hmm. And that's turned out to, like, let's say if you wanted to migrate a lot of people over to ACHs different tools, it isn't necessarily compatible with the Kitsap County of trying to automate these things. So we're looking at doing online banking, whether it be with Columbia Bank, or we're looking at options anyway. But credit card charges are really expensive.
So where is that shown right here?
On the credit card charges, there's a line. Let me see here. So it's about, let's see. I believe it comes in under
comes in under, let's see, supplies. It's under, I think, stable. Where did they lodge it? Oh, I only got this one.
Is it under professional services?
No, that's typically consulting.
About bank charges.
That could be.
But that's so
low. It's not under bank charges.
Bank charges.
Because, so the amount when we did a guesstimate, you know, we kind of just broke it down. We were looking specifically at very specific charges from a specific vendor. And it was about $30,000 a year. And I think it comes in under professional services, but I should have a detailed
that's
one
what
here.
I thought it was.
That looks right.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Just lumped it in under that.
Yep.
But there's a, we have a, you know, there's even a more, much more detailed one. But it's, you know, we think we could, it's not only that we'd save $30,000 maybe or so, but I think it's also, it's just we need to make it a lot easier for people to conduct business with us. Mm-hmm. We're trying to move away from any cash handling whatsoever. It's actually, you know, kind of, I don't even feel like it's a very good practice to have cash handling. It takes a lot of training. It takes tons of, it takes two people. You have to double count. They got to both be present for every mm-hmm. little, for a quarter. By the time you're done, there's very little value to it. And then the fact is the employees are handling the cash. You know, otherwise you got to pay a really expensive, have Brinks come in. It's super expensive to mm-hmm. do it. Or you got to take it up to the bank. I just don't really feel safe, you know, in this environment. It's so much different. I mean, you know, we had a sheriff's car broken into in the parking lot. Right?
Yeah.
So I just don't really like the idea of us handling cash. So we're trying to move away from that, but we have to give the customers a really easy, viable alternative.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people that don't like having their personal information, their financial information on the net.
Got
it. You know, so.
Understood. So moving on to just a discussion about cash reserves. So in January of 2019, we were at $831,000. And now we're currently at about just right around $2.6 million. And we hope to exceed $2.8 million, and I think we will by the end of this year. So if we achieve that goal, we have grown our reserves by $2 million over the past 4 years, which would align with about $500,000 in annual average contributions to our savings or reserves. And we take our responsibility as fiduciaries of the public trust seriously, and we hope these results instill confidence that we can be reliable stewards. We are trying to build our annual savings contributions to over $1 million annually to fund our long-term costs for replacement of our capital assets. However, we will have operating expenses and capital repair and replacement ongoing, and that will be a real challenge. Staff have built a cash flow model that currently goes out 30 years. Using that model and assumptions built into that model, we can look ahead and we see we have a shortfall to fund the replacement of our capital assets in about 10 to 15 years, depending on life and cost of those assets. We will have a limited tax general obligation bond debt payment of $85,514 for this coming year. Mm-hmm. The principal lines of business that where we are focusing are the marina, economic development and existing lines of business such as parking and fuel, projects that support our responsibility as a transportation hub. And first and foremost, we always want to prioritize the safety, life safety and property. And secondly, maintain continuity of operations. And third, create economic opportunities. And speaking of economic opportunities, so what we try to do is we have been trying to save money and build our cash reserves. So if we have $2.8 million and we owe, let's say, $800,000, we're still net. After all debt paid off, we'd have a net of $2 million. We would like to continue to grow the cash reserves, and that goes towards funding that we know in that 10-15 year when we have kind of a balloon payment if we replace the marina.
Mm-hmm.
But between here and there, we have to maintain all of our assets. And so I have given you a copy, and this is... this is a draft of a proposed capital list of projects. I don't know if you can have it. Yeah. So the piling, we're looking at doing tiling replacements, so we have to do an assessment. We're probably going to kick that off this year. So, and then we have dredge permitting. We need to submit, we're going to submit to the Army Corps for a programmatic permit for the port. We're going to see if we can't do that this year, but if not, we'll kick it into next year, $5,000.
That covers the dredging too?
It doesn't cover dredging. First, we have to get the permit, but we know now, after having conducted a few years consecutively of bathymetric surveys of the whole port submerged land area, that after the dredge was done in 2016, we know that there's not a resedimentation, a significant resedimentation that is occurring as a result of Carpenter Creek effluent. So it's really minimal. But that doesn't mean that we don't want to maintain the depths. You know, even a few inches can make a difference at the boat ramp, right? You know, even 6 inches.
Yep.
So we would like to, we'll go back and we'll look at what the original depths were. We'll do a volumetric estimation of what we need for maintenance dredging. And then we need to go get a programmatic permit, and then we'll start to do maintenance dredging. And once we have it too, we can also maybe apply for grants and see if we can get something a little more significant, you know, to be able to help cover that cost.
The permit that you spoke about originally that I asked was it had to do with the dredging. What was that for? What would that be for?
So the programmatic permit, what we would do is we would do an assessment of all the assets, and so all in-water work would be covered under this permit.
Okay.
So it would include dredging, it would include piling replacement, it would include dock replacement, any repair and maintenance to anything, and that's in water and also along the shore.
Yep.
So what we want to do the problem is permitting has become so challenging and so expensive, and it draws out so long. You want to do a programmatic if you can, versus you used to just be able to go get a quick permit, a relatively quick permit, to go do an isolated piece of work. But now people are just getting programmatic permits and going one time to the Army Corps, National and Fisheries Service, and the feds and the tribes and everybody for approval and review.
Yeah.
Question. Can we do questions now, or do you want us to wait?
I don't know why.
It's up to the...
What do you guys want to do?
Do you want to wait and let him finish and then address questions? Because we are in the public hearing.
I think I'd rather do that, actually.
Wait.
If you don't mind.
The only problem with that is that it's difficult to go back to where we were.
Yeah.
And know what the question
is
about.
That's true. Yeah. Good point. Yeah.
This is very complicated stuff.
It is complicated. Yeah. What do you have?
It's Brian Anderson. Greg, that permit you just mentioned, how long is that good for?
Oh, good question.
They're usually good for like 10 years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You have 3 years to start.
Yeah.
You can get an additional 1 year above that, and then you're required to have it completed within an additional 2 years. So I think it's more like 7 in total.
7, but other people are saying, well, they've extended them out because it's so problematic. They don't want to have to go back and keep reviewing it because they got such a backlog.
If you start in the permit process, then that's important to say, okay, well, you know, if there's the shoreline-related permit is what this is hung on, but then once you have that shoreline permit, then the other agencies are essentially running the permit. You know, like Fish and Wildlife or Army Corps.
How long does it take to apply for this permit?
The application, well, the application isn't so bad. It's the approval of the permit.
Yeah.
So,
is this full line with the ones that they are saying are taking up to 2 years for approval?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes longer. That's why, like, if you say it's 7, but it takes 3, you know.
It's important to do your Army Corps procedures first before you apply. Have your federal, at least the federal system should be applied for prior to going to the county and getting the county permit.
Yeah. And then, our assets were originally, this was originally created by the Army Corps. So hopefully that should help us. But two, what's happened is the federal agencies understand what's going on. So they've said, you know, they're like, okay, we don't want you to have to go back to the square one at 7 years, when 7 years to get the work done alone is really problematic. So they're like, and it's a programmatic permit, so it should be a total comprehensive permit, so you shouldn't have to be going back and forth. And it's kind of like having a comprehensive plan that covers all assets versus going and updating your comprehensive plan every year. Unless you add an asset or you take an asset out, your comprehensive plan should just not need to be updated, but the commission would endorse it every year.
Mm-hmm.
But same kind of is what they're trying to do with these programmatic permits. Yeah. They're really buried. And I know that there's some efforts to try to fund a permitting person amongst the ports, and they are having actually done that, but it was a pretty big upfront price tag for us. But we can piggyback on that permitting, the individual to help us with permitting it in DC on an hourly basis. So we'll see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
We'll look at doing the sail float replacement. That's not going to be eligible under these current grants. So we're going to have to approach that a little differently. The RCO, so under the transient floats, we know we had the $614,000 in RCO grants that were a combination of a couple of different grants. And I'll get that down to the bottom there. This will all roll down to the bottom, and then we can discuss it. But that's what the total grant was approved for. And as well as the middle RCO middle restroom for $328,000. Let's see. The Washington Boulevard Properties Development will be looking for another $50,000 for next year. And under the Aquatic Lands Development PMA survey and modification, we're going to pursue an expansion of our port management agreement, which is what the PMA stands for. And to do so, they're going to want us to survey and modify our port management agreement with the Department of Natural Resources at the state. So we're guessing that would be around $10,000, we hope. And what we would like to do with that, the kind of the end goal is that we actually proactively manage the submerged lands all around the Apple Tree Cove and, you know, areas which we can do a really good job because we have our eyes on it all the time.
Yeah.
Plus we understand all the business, and it would allow us to be able to work both with WashDOT, I believe Kitsap Transit, and then all of the private landowners more effectively. And then we have some permitting for Washington Boulevard properties development. And then we get in down to piling replacement. We're going to probably pursue actual replacement if and when we have to get the permit from the Army Corps to be able to do anything there, unless it's an emergency. And then administrative offices, we're looking at the windows, replacing the windows. They're really pretty old. They're not really performing, and we don't want them to start damaging the actual get into the framework, but they're not doing great. And then we looked at a boat and a boat motor, just do a partial repower, so it's a $6,600 effort to have an extra boat and boat motors back up. We did look at getting a dump trailer, but we'll do that maybe in 2024. And then, you know, we feel like we need to have a security system. The one that we originally spec'd out, it's about $37,000. I've talked to OESD. We just have to decide, you know, do we think the security systems, they basically, you get a picture of them, but you can't really see license plates. How much do we get out of it? It's really more of a response that we then turn over to the police, and then they can pursue these individuals. But it's usually a general description of somebody wearing a black hoodie in a black car, we don't get that much. We might get a BMW or something like that. They eventually chase them down, and sometimes they do pretty well, but how much more do we get out of a $37,000 security camera system? Mm-hmm. Or should we maybe put that into personnel staff and then have somebody that's walking around?
Oh, right.
You know, that would sometimes a live body is better than do it. But OESD, which is our Olympic Educational Service District, they put in a security camera system on their site, and they were having issues over in Bremerton. So we were thinking that, you know, maybe we could cut that back, and then maybe we'll put that money either into expanding the security, try it out, see if it works. If it does, great. If it doesn't, then we'll go to a more aggressive security system in 2024. Mm-hmm. Maybe earlier if we really feel like, if we see like crime is really, it starts getting really bad, ramped up, then we'll have to do something. But that might involve actually hiring someone. One thing I found is that if you do have a problem, you need to simply react immediately in the moment and regardless, and I'll have to come to you if we have like a contractor have to do something. You don't wait on those things because they just keep victimizing mm-hmm. the same area until mm-hmm. they get caught. On the fuel dock, we have really old fuel dispensers. So we were talking about replacing both of them at $70,000. I think what we might do is we'll get one of them at $35,000, where we'll either replace one of them or we'll just see how rapidly we can respond to have it replaced if one of them goes down. Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to phase it in over a 2-year period. And then the parking, we're going to put that off until 2025. It's really just seal coating and restriping. We restripe every year anyway, pretty much, but it's the seal coat. It looks in great shape, though. We had it inspected by Northern Asphalt. And then we're looking at, you know, tenant office rooms, but those are being put off until 2024. We first want to be able to get these, get the middle restrooms completed. And what we're going to do there, we're doing a design build. We originally slated to do
modular,
a pre-engineered mm-hmm. modular building, yeah. But we're going to do a design build, and we're working with Wenslow and Associates to come up with something and be a design build. And I think we have enough money. We talked to RCO. We were just going back and forth with RCO. That's how I know the sale flowed. They said you can't use that even as any kind of guest mortgage whatsoever as storage. So mm-hmm. They also said though, hey, you can put showers in those if we want. So we'll have them just in case we need to back it up. So if we take the showers down in the administrative offices mm-hmm. in order to redo the administrative building, mm-hmm. then we have showers over in that middle restroom. They did when they originally built when. Mm-hmm. And by segregating the power, we have to look at that, but we'll segregate it. And then we looked at relocating that over towards the swale, the bio swale, the green area, that park, maybe move it into the parking lot a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think that looks like it'll work okay for RCO. They said we have to go do a new cultural resources report. So then when you look down at the bottom of this under 2023, you'll see that the RCO grant for the boating facilities program, that was $421,250 that we'll receive. And then the RCO, the big tier one grant, was $73,800. And then the ALEA grant was $172,200 of, this is the state. So if we back that out of the total of $1.138 million, you get $471,350 is what would come out of our reserves.
Yeah.
That's equivalent to the cash inflow very closely, actually.
Of annual, yeah.
But we do look at these programs, and I was like, well, obviously we want to do the transient floats, and we want to do the middle bathroom, and that's $950,000 of it, almost, out of the $1.1 million. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at these other programs saying, hey, I think these are all things we just have to pursue. And some of it's really important, I think, that if we have to go through and do a lot of the engineering and get the design and the scope of work ready for almost all of our capital assets. And once that is really gets to like a 30% design and we're pretty firm about it, the good thing about that is that then we're positioned to be able to go get grant money if money just becomes available for different things. And you're like shovel ready for applications. So it's not necessarily building our cash reserves, which is an important consideration, but it is reinvesting in the port. And as you can see, I highlighted in yellow those line items which were non-marina related. All the rest of that is marina related, and it adds up to about $90,000. Mm-hmm. So all the out of this, you know, $1 million of it is all investment in the marina. Mm-hmm. So I think that tells a story too. It's, I think sometimes if you're a boating customer or a mortgage customer, and you know, you say, hey, are you guys really investing in this and doing things? This doesn't include the maintenance and repair. So small things like adding cleats, like Rick Evelith brought up, adding cleats, adding a safety ladder here or there.
Mm-hmm.
We don't, obviously those don't go into a capital program, we just do them.
Yeah, right, yeah. Right.
That's it.
Okay. One thing I thought might be good, we discussed it before, is for the parking, parking stations having, seeking EV charging.
Yeah.
As that grant possibility or something like that down the road.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
And there is money out there right now. And I think the key thing is to, as we move forward with the architect,
mm-hmm.
you know, they'll roll that into some of the design
yeah.
and say, okay, here's some dedicated areas. This would make sense, even how you distribute the EV
right.
charges.
Mm-hmm.
And there are unknowns that I can't, you know, speak to because it's a little bit more recent. But like, for example, what is the effect of WashDOT electrifying the ferries? Because that's going to be bringing in substantial power, and it's going to come from somewhere. And how is that going to go? And where does that, and then do you want to feed off of that potentially?
Right. Yeah.
You know, then you might say, oh, well, this is, you know, far more convenient to just, you know, go pull right off of this main, you know, main utility corridor
mm-hmm.
than to go in along Central Avenue somewhere to try to line them in along there, for example.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And then the other thing I think we need to do is, you know, we didn't budget for it, but we're certainly going to do it. And that is just simply take what we have for a footprint and say, okay, let's really aggressively see how we can build additional revenue just through direct sales for parking, for fuel, and then for seasonal mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like right now, we're behind for booking seasonal mortgage for
seasonal,
last year,
yeah.
but we'll, you know, let's put a little extra effort and see if we can fill up the mortgage, the guest dock.
Mm-hmm. Great. Just jotting down that. Anything else?
Can we ask a question?
Yes, sir.
Speaking of additional revenue, looking at the mortgage rates, you're basically in the leasing business or rental business, and in if you had a big apartment building and you had 100% occupancy, you'd be taking your rates up substantially until you had like 2 or 4% vacancy. I think we're leaving a lot of money on the table. Why not raising the mortgage rates? Especially if everybody's full.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And waiting less.
Yeah.
Market will bear more.
Mm-hmm. I think what this comes out to is this proposal. So what we looked at was, even though we're keeping up with the average, a lot of the ports are doing anywhere from between 5 and 11% adjustments. This, by staying with the average rate, we're pretty close to around 7, between 5 and 7.5%. Some of those marinas, what they did was, they, for some reason, and I don't agree with this, and they pegged it to CPI. So the rate setting methodology amongst marinas in the Puget Sound is incredibly variable. There's no real consistent approach to how you do this. And if we were to take a look and say, okay, what's our level of services and amenities that are available to us versus when we kind of start benchmarking ourselves against others, you know, the fact that we lost a grocery store, so for a lot of people, they're like, well, you don't have a grocer anymore that we can go get groceries for our boat. So why do I, that's a problem because our electric cars don't go all the way down to Safeway.
They could,
try.
But it's illegal.
They can't go one way.
They can't get back. They can't get back. And people invariably try. So, you know, so then it's like, well, how do you troubleshoot those? Because it does, you know, we don't have a boatyard right here, right? So there are some things where they'll say, hey, you don't really have the amenities if you're in the top quartile. You're not you're not at the very top 10 out of the marinas, but are we at the average or a little bit above? Then it's the rate of change. So we have, what we've seen is really started to see a steady turnover, but not real rampant turnover, but like, a, you know, 10 out of, like I said, out of 252.
10 boats out of 252. Yeah.
But it's still going to be, it's still going to be substantial. And I think the people that are really getting aggressive are the ones that banked it, I should say, they benchmarked it to the CPI. Because CPI was so low for so many years. So now the strange thing is like Edmunds, for example, uses CPI plus 1%. So they did the cash flow model basis for how they'd started to adjust rates over years. So they started losing a lot of ground over the past like 5-10 years. So when they do this adjustment at 11.1% is what they proposed, they would average a 4% increase over the past 5 years. That's what it calculated out when they're up there. So I personally have really discouraged percentage use of percentages, because 100% of nothing is nothing, and 1% of a billion is a lot. So I look at us and I just say, where should we be at? And I think, you know, we're probably in the between the 50th and the 75th percentile. I'd say we should be in that quartile. But now I'm kind of concerned with boating really taking a hit with fuel prices. Two, we know the recession, and we're getting a lot of feedback from boaters. Like, we depend on power boaters a lot to use the guest dock. But even within our marina, because we have covered moorage, it's very power boat dependent. So yacht clubs coming in. So I think that if we just have to be, I've tried to be sensitive, but I'd rather, I don't necessarily disagree that should you go off of occupancy or vacancy, and when do you flip that switch? But I think I like stability and growth. So I'm trying to recommend to the commission ways that we keep and continue to grow our revenue and our profitability, which we have, and also though not whipsaw the customers. They want to have some kind of predictability. We did say, you know, years past, hey, we're going to kind of reevaluate. And all I'm proposing here is, hey, let's after we do a 3-year adjustment, because we've increased rates substantially. Like, I don't like to even talk percentages, because we're way crazy, right? If you look CPI, we would look really like we're so disproportionate. But the commission, you know, kind of agreed with that strategy. Yeah, we need to really ramp up rates. We have ramped up rates this is our fourth year. And this would still be a pretty substantial increase over, you know, where we are. But we think that we'll be pretty close to the average, but it will be a shot in the arm, and then see what happens with boating this year. And if we see any kind of some stabilizing influence after you get through an election, because the midterm election, those things going into them, it just seems like everything is destabilized. And so I'd rather secure the revenue and be sure that we're going to get that guest moorage, because this is discretionary income. That's one of the problems with this, is that it's a little bit.
I would see the guest moorage as being more subject to cost demands than permanent moorage. Is permanent moorage the primary reason that the cash is so good?
No, it's part of it. We actually doubled guest moorage revenue since we've been here. We had more than double parking revenue when we started, and then COVID hit. So then parking crashed. So then we were already going to redirect toward guest moorage, but then we really redoubled our efforts. And then we also changed our whole approach and methodology to non-peak guest moorage. And we went and we created a seasonal moorage approach. So that way we have a continuous supply of income. Otherwise, it was sitting vacant, producing no revenue, and the parking lot was sitting vacant. Now we see parking lots rising back up to pre-pandemic levels, and we've also really increased the guest moorage like substantially, and we know we have more room to grow, because we figure we're around 30-40%, I think, or 30-40% occupancy for the guest. Yeah, so we know that we can push that but we only have, you know, 11 staff, and I'm a big believer in direct outreach to customers and actually representing your product and answering detailed questions about their experience. I still advertise, we still believe in advertising, but it's pretty passive. And then we've been looking at mobile apps. There's a guy that developed a mobile app nearby that I think actually is really good. I was really impressed with it. So I think that we also have to start focusing on different demographics. Mm-hmm. Yeah, people that are voters, that they're very, very smart with iPads and being able to look at different marinas. And there are a lot of these, you know, the information flows so fast. I had a couple people get on me about our fuel prices, and they're on the radio, so they call all over the sound. Everybody, hey, they're a nickel more. Okay,
surprise, there's not an app for it.
It's even probably better than an app. It's just word of mouth.
Word of mouth. That.
Yeah.
We also get revenue from Washington State Ferries because they lease the land for where they are. We're one of the two ports in Washington State that actually has a ferry dock on our property.
We ought to soak the ferry system. Especially when they bought that
creates a whole different dynamic there. And also we get a little over $200,000 a year in property taxes.
Yeah.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah.
210, I think, or something.
Yeah. I think the tough thing is the marina was built in 67, and the assets need to be reinvested in. And as they get older and older and you're close to that replacement, now you got to sink more money, just like your house. Now all of a sudden you got to, you know, the repair and maintenance goes up, and then you're confronted, well, do I want to pay all that money on repair and maintenance, or should I just go to replacement? But you got to have the money. So we looked at it and said, you know, we really, really need to build our cash reserves as aggressively as we possibly can. And then when you get to a certain threshold, then you can just say, okay, now there's more discretion as to what, you know, what does the commission really want to do? And I think that's, this coming year, that's some work that we need to do. That's wood to chop, that we need to explore all the potential alternatives for the commissioners to determine what they want to see as the future for the port.
Well, speaking personally, I would love to see the port become more than just a parking lot for the ferries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd love to see old downtown Kingston enhanced.
Mm-hmm. Old downtown Kingston
enhanced.
Enhanced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's surrounded by parking lots.
Yeah. Right.
Maybe a grocery store.
Yes. A lease has been signed.
Yeah. Oh, for the,
yeah.
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 What's going in?
Do we grocery
outlet. It is grocery outlet.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
But not right away. It's going to be a long process.
Is the county going to make them re-permit and build an extension to the sidewalk from nowhere? Nowhere?
I would wager that may occur.
Oh, the permit is depends in process, on, isn't it?
Depends on the value of the permit and the improvements that are required, essentially. So the permit is still a pending payment, as I understand. Mm-hmm. That's the status that's shown on the portal. You can anybody can look on that parcel and click on the bottom of the parcel information and see permit details, and then you can click on the permit and it shows you the status of the permit.
So we shall see.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I you know, we've been pursuing and looking at designs for some development on port property, which we own, versus having to acquire some property to do some development downtown. If you look, you know, I don't have a formal, you know, part of it is I don't always believe you have to have a formal study exactly, but you do need some sort of a basis. But if you do look, there's been a steady degradation and loss of businesses. And if you look at an aerial over, you know, you do these time-lapse aerials, you can see where businesses were lost or places were demoed, and then it's turned into parking lot. And then if the SR 104 realignment occurs, some of these major programs, they affect people's appetite for development until those things are done, right? If you're going to have a, you know, you're going to be shaving off areas and, they have to see that actually it's going to happen because they don't want to, you know, they're not going to do anything with that property if they know it's going to be condemned and taken by the state. So, but we have got some, we have gone through and we've got, done some work with Wenslow Architects and to look at site development of the port. And that's going to, steadily kind of be developed as one of the big alternatives going forward. And then there are some assets that we know are sitting vacant and we need to do something with those. And then it's a matter of presenting those alternatives to the, to the commission, but now we see a parking demand. It just generates cash.
Why don't you sell parking for the Hill House?
That's one of the alternatives that we're looking at. So yeah, we actually had done an aerial of that to actually take that and turn it into some parking. But then when COVID hit, we said, well, that's
not a non-starter.
Right. So that's when we said, well, let's really aggressively go. And we, like I said, we more than doubled that guest mortgage. But, it's like 300,000 plus, 400,000, So better.
Guest mortgage talk with my grandson a lot. And frankly, I think the mortgage fees are extravagant. I go, God, and they get it, So kudos to you folks. Mm-hmm.
But it's
got a hundred or a 200 or 1.2 million in a boat. I guess that's not much to pay.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, then the other thing that we've tried to be—it doesn't really show here—but we're almost—I am at least obsessed about risk, downside risk to the port. You just can't have it. You can't have it. We can't weather it. We can't pay for it. We don't want lawsuits. We want goodwill. We have customers, and I think that the staff are really great. I mean, the staff we've really invested. We've got really, really qualified people, and they treat people like, you're a customer. We're running a business, but you're a customer. And that's different than I think a lot of public agencies. They don't have that pressure. And so I think we're probably, I would say we're more sensitive too about that, when some things do come down to price, but.
You're a business.
Yeah, right, exactly, we are a business. But we've also not had, we went after derelict vessel and it took 3 years, and then the state took ownership of it just before it broke free. But, those derelict vessels, they would, if we had the wind wrong, it would have devastated the marina. It could have sank just out here, just being eyesore. There could have been ulcer, and it could have been loss of life, sadly. So I think that we're really good there. We have one really minor claim that's outstanding. So we don't have a bunch of problems and claims. We don't have litigation, and we don't have public record requests, hardly. So a lot of those things would suck up a lot of effort.
Yeah, it's going to do
and
that.
And they're painful. I mean, it's not good. So all those things, I think, are really good indicators too. Mm-hmm. That you're stable, create stability, and you reestablish the public trust, which I think is important.
Mm-hmm. Kudos to you all from my perspective. I think you're doing the right thing.
Thank you, Johnny.
Good job.
Appreciate that.
I have one clarification on the credit card fees.
Yeah.
So according to Stacy, fuel is labeled under cost of goods sold. That's in the cost of goods sold. And then all other charges are under professional services.
Okay, gotcha.
That makes sense.
So the fuel credit card charges are under
cost of goods sold.
Okay, good to know.
Yes.
Thank you.
Oh, they bring it out,
Can I ask one more?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's Brian Anderson. I don't see any dock or piling work in 2023, right? Okay. So when that does occur, how disruptive will that be to the marina? In other words, mm-hmm. B-dock, I'm on B-dock. Yep. Is everybody going to have to go anchor out for a while and all that work's done, or is it?
No, I think we're only going to be able to probably do, I can't remember, I think the magic number, I can't remember if it's 17 pilings a year or that. So I think what we'll do is, it's really hard to get, you know, even to get the work done. So we'll have to decide, we have a piling plan, so we have it all mapped out, and then we haven't done the sequencing of the pilings, but what we would do is, that would affect us potentially on income, right? So we would want to relocate people with guest dock, ideally, if they're going to have to, if we're having to do work right in their slip. So that would be a calculation that we'd have to make when we do it. But probably we'd just relocate people to the guest dock during that period.
I think that's what they did.
But we have fish windows too.
There's fishery windows
and
that
so
you're
really
have to
constrained.
Work with as well.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You can only do it during certain time periods. And yeah, it's but they're really good about moving boats to where they'll be in a safe place. Mm-hmm. Oh, Mike went away. Yeah.
And one other thing, I probably should ask this last time. So the marina rates for 2023, this base column on your schedule, that's what's driving the revenue.
That and then there's also an adjustment of premium for covered on top of the base revenue. So that's how they wanted to calculate it.
Yes. So this whole column is mortgage and then covered mortgage.
For the perm mortgage, yes, that's
for
correct.
Permanent. Yeah. So permanent is 37% of the total revenue for 23.
Mm-hmm.
And you've taken all of the slips times these, this base column
exactly.
rate.
We
extrapolated that out.
That's exactly what we do. We have it all modeled and we do divide slip.
And then I'm sure I'm more concerned about next year and people going bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
I think
too.
It's going to be real tough.
Yeah,
I agree.
And so at some point, you're probably monitoring that. You got it on your radar.
100%.
This guy gets affected if
everything.
Down,
yep.
This is
everything
first,
gets affected.
That's correct.
Versus people, hopefully.
Yep.
Move this one around.
Okay. Yep.
So we'll have to see how it goes. Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that's kind of a. So you really, you know, you honestly have to get down to the nitty gritty and do a calculation, you know, in terms of every single permanent mortgage customer. And you know, and you know that once they hit the age of 75, they start to age out after that point. So it's just a matter, you got to go down and really understand your customer and each and every one of them, and then you have to extrapolate out what's the probability, and then how are you going to backfill that, and then look at your wait list. Because we don't, to be honest, we don't even really work very hard at building the wait list. Mm-hmm. We don't put pressure on getting people to pay $100 to get on the wait list. We offer it up. I'd say it's much more passive than actually trying to generate a really aggressive wait list, because we know we already have plenty of demand, you know. So then it's just a matter of, you know, do you have the services too? Because if you say, oh, we're going to crank up the rates, okay, let's really crank up the rates. We're as good as Port Anacortes, right? Okay, well, we don't have restaurants like Anacortes. We don't have the services like Anacortes. So we don't have the population like Anacortes. So, you know, you got to make sure you do really compare apples to apples. But you do, you know, you don't want to leave money on the table necessarily. But you also, the rate of change, we've been far more aggressive than anybody, I mean anybody in the Puget Sound in terms of rate adjustments. So I think you got to be, you know, it wouldn't hurt to say, hey, let's stay at the average rate, see what happens with the recession, do an analysis of the actual permanent mortgage, and then start and keep building, you know, this other source of revenue, because they're just cash. It's just, as we build that sales, that just goes right to our bottom line. It's on the same footprint. It's just that, you know, we have to get staff to kind of start focusing that way. But we had a lot of staff turnover. Now we've got a really stable staff that we've been investing in. So I feel like, you know, they're just kind of getting, you know, they got a year, 2 years under them, except Ray's been around quite a while. We have a few people been around a while. I've been around the industry for a long time. So just a matter of focusing on that. Mm-hmm. And we don't have as many distractions. You know, we're doing the state audit right now, and I will be done with that, I'll bet you, I think by the end of this year. And I think that, like Audra and Stacy, they went through and they did our own internal audit for the past 3 years and rebuilt everything. So I think my interview with the state auditor was pretty positive. I think she was, you know, she was impressed as I am with their capabilities. So I think they're an incredible addition to the board.
Only the chair means.
Yeah, that was my understanding, that only the chair meets with the auditor.
We're interviewed with the. I get interviewed by the auditor too.
But the other commissioners don't have to unless
they
want
the chair.
To. Just the chair.
Yeah, just the chair.
Yeah.
But I interviewed. So the controller, she interviewed. They interviewed with the auditor because they're the ones basically going to have to produce all the results. But I think they didn't feel comfortable unless they had actually put their thumbprint on every single number. And so they went through every single number. I think that's fair to say.
Can you do that?
It's pretty, and they did it in amazing record time, in my estimation, and not easy.
This is the state?
No, our controller.
No, I mean the auditor.
Yeah, the state audit office. Yeah.
SAO.
Do they issue an opinion of any kind?
Yes.
At the end of it.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Internal controls or just financials?
Everything. This is a 3-year audit. It'll go soup to nuts on both the financial, internal controls, the financials. What are they going to do? They have both kind of, they're doing a, now they've added on a different component, which I'm really glad, and that is financial performance. Because they're going to hold you accountable,
versus
like
budget.
For example, we run through the algorithms now, she just told me, you guys look awesome. Like, if I run you through the algorithms, same with our bond counsel, she goes, wow, look at your freaking financials compared to what you were when you issued the bond.
Yep.
She goes, you guys are rocking it. Like, Greg, I don't see like numbers like this, great. And I said, yeah, but this isn't even good enough, close to good enough, right? We're maybe halfway to our goal. And so she goes, well, you're exactly right because you're using a life cycle cash flow model to be able to determine down the road, you know, I won't be here probably when it hits, but down the road, you don't leave somebody holding the bag, right? So otherwise it's easy to do something now and say, oh, well, you celebrate, yeah, we're great in the moment, but we're still way behind where we need to be for the long term.
Right.
And so she said, you know, that the fact that you've even done that. So I did a financial sustainability presentation. I did it for the Public Port and Marina Subcommittee about marinas, and I did it for the in work session for the commission, and with Audra and and Stacy, and we look at it. And we say, hey, we can see this 10, 15 year down the road of replacing marina. How are we going to do that? Right.
Right.
We got to figure out. It's like having not only a balanced budget for the whole life of the whole of all assets for the whole port. If you're on track for the whole life cycle replacement of the whole port, then I'd say that's a huge, huge success. Most people don't want to take it on because it's daunting, because we're all asset heavy. We have 30 million in assets, right? How are you going to replace 30 million? And you're really looking at the net present value, and then you're trying to project what the future value is going to be. And we know that those costs have just gone up crazily year over year. So it's a huge lift, right? But the fact that we've done that calculation, the auditor was like, yeah, that's rare.
They're really good at, if they recognize that there's humans running this. And if something happens, the conferences that we go to, they encourage you, self-report yourself to the auditor. Tell them, hey, we did this, and this is how we're going to correct it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have it in their notes. Okay, well, I see that this happened at this point, but you did this, this, and this to correct it.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes so much better if you're just totally upfront and recognizing there is a human element here and that things do happen occasionally, and you just have to, as long as you correct them and do the right thing, then
auditors
are very understanding about things like that and very supportive of it, because that's what they want to do, is they want to find things that aren't correct and make sure that going forward they aren't done that way anymore.
And and I would say, when I say we, I really should say Audra and Stacy, we did develop a line of business model, which we haven't rolled out to the commission, that puts an allocation of all G&A to all the different assets, for example. So we know we have a number of assets that are non-revenue producing. We have parks, right? Which don't necessarily make money, but like the Mike Wallace Park, you would say, well, that's definitely ancillary to the marina. That helps the experience of as a transportation hub. We're a marina and transportation hub primarily, and then we're looking at doing real estate development to try to spur economic development here in Kingston. So those would probably be the three larger buckets for a line of business. But we have these assets broken out. They've built it. They built the cash flow model. And then we're trying to control our capital costs. So I believe pretty strongly, and we use Mark Horton as our port engineer and Tori Grant's our maintenance manager and capital program manager with Mark. I believe that we can control our costs, and we're in the process of doing that. So I've seen really, really like eye-popping numbers from marina replacement, the city of Des Moines, John Wayne Marina, things that people have been looking at currently, and it's really overwhelming, right? These costs are just huge. But we are partnering with Port of Friday Harbor. I believe that these guys, we can do, because we're both public agencies, we can do an interlocal agreement, and they can manufacture. They've been manufacturing their own dock sections, for example, and they're really fantastically engineered. And we went up there with Tori and Mark, and we looked at them, and they were like, wow, we were really impressed, actually, with these dock sections. So we believe that's a 30 to 50-year product, and we can do it at a much, much lower cost. So I think, we just got done replacing. Tori went in with the staff, with Marvin, and they replaced part of the seawall themselves. So they went in and... rather than contracting, it's really expensive. We can do it. They did it in a couple of days, and they moved about 6 yards of heavy rock in there, pulled some rock up off the beach into it, just to do the repair underneath that one gangway, as an example. So we put in bird deterrents. We put in our Wi-Fi. So the Wi-Fi, we're not done with the Wi-Fi yet, but we believe we can get Wi-Fi. We want to be superlative, and it's like now it's a staple for people, right?
Sure.
So there's these things that I think add real value, and they also add value to the community. So those things are that we're trying to pursue, and if we can do it in-house or we can partner with people, then we're going to do that.
Savings wherever possible. Or efficiencies.
They moved 6 yards of gravel without a shoreline management permit?
You didn't need it for that. It's not really. It's a small.
There's a maintenance exemption.
Yeah, there's
permit. A maintenance. Yeah.
Yeah. You got to maintain it. And you can see where it was starting to erode. Yeah. We're careful. We're by the book.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Well, any other thoughts? Good of the order for the commission, or I think what we can do, I think, is. Adjourn the public hearing portion then. I propose that we do so.
We don't need a motion.
We don't need a motion for that.
No.
Good. Okay. It is 10:02. And I believe that don't have is when the next regular meeting is
next
scheduled.
November 16th.
November 16th, right.
Yes.
At 1 p.m.
Right here.
Oh, not in case you guys.
Tomorrow. Oh, no, yeah, tomorrow, just for information, the Kingston Citizen Advisory Council, Community Advisory Council, has a special meeting with Commissioner Gelder here at in the big room or via Zoom. And so Commissioner Gelder does a state of the county in relation to North Kitsap. And so it'll be pretty interesting, I think.
What time is that?
It's at 6:30.
What day again?
That's tomorrow. Tomorrow evening. Yeah, tomorrow evening, 6:30. I think it's a good nexus to understand what's going on in the county.
Work, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep.
Could the Port of Kingston put out an email with the Zoom address to that meeting?
Sure.
Well, yeah, for sure.
Betcha.
Thank you.